I have been thinking about a couple of topics that we could discuss today. I wanted to make this one special because, mind you, this is the very first episode of the second season. Meaning, we have been doing this for 6 months straight. We are relentless. Every week, there is a new episode. And I promise you, whatever you started with, if your main goal is to become a better man, then you are at the right place. There is no way you will ever leave any of my episodes without learning anything. This episode, I kind of did it before, but I did it in French, so I figured I should do it again. In life, we are basically playing a game. Some of us might not think that they are. Some of us might find themselves to be against the idea of playing a game. But regardless of what you think, you belong to a chessboard. Sometimes, people will make moves on you. They'll want you to do something. They will want to use you to gain various advantages. They will try to hurt you to get what they want. Especially if you stand in their way to what they want. You might want to separate yourself from the fray, thinking that you are better, that you do not belong there. But unless your retraction is part of playing the game, you should never refrain from playing the game. The reason is that although not playing the game brings the loss to your expenses, there are more people than you may think who suffer from the loss due to your refusal to play the game. Because the fact is that life is cruel. You are either playing or you are forfeiting, but either way, you will feel the pressure. However, if you accept the game as part of life and as a duty that you must fulfill, then you must guess that no game in life, especially the game of life, is played without rules. The rules seem to be the same for everyone, but sometimes, a lot of times really, we mis-evaluate the rules, and as a result, we completely go astray. In this game, there's only one rule, really. But making good use of the rule depends on the interpretation that one has of the rule. The rule is simple. We just need to know who we're playing with. Most of us are oblivious to that fact that makes us play in a way that sets us up for failure in this game of life. One Chinese philosopher thought about the concept of this game of life and came up with the fact that to play it accurately, one must know the vis-a-vis. But one step further, one should know oneself. Let me quote the statement with accuracy before we go further. He who knows others is wise. He who knows himself is enlightened. Lao Tzu. The contemplation of the different players that might be involved in this game of life with us is a definite must do for someone who is willing to gain a certain level of mastery over the game. Observing how other people are playing involves observing their actions, how they handle their losses, the wins, the anger, and anything that is involved in the interactions they have with you and you with them. At any given point in time, We humans are exchanging blows. We are sparring with each other. And there are various ways for us to confront each other. To use those moments of confrontation as a measurement stick to determine where we fit on the food chain. Sometimes, what we see does not fit in our current plan. But those sights make us so embarrassed that we do not want to take them head on. What we do not know is that disregarding our own behavioral system as we play the game robs us of vital element of improvement as far as our kinship with our deep self is concerned. It's easier to observe who is not us and to say, oh, that guy is a maniac, he's stupid, he's emotional, he's not reasonable. And the reason why it is so easy is that we see those things from a perspective that is not biased by anything sympathetic to ourselves. The judgment that we put on other people is solely intended to judge other people, not us. So it's easy to pass those judgments. But let's pull back for a minute and try to understand what is it that it really means to know others. Does it mean to judge others? Does it mean to blame others based on our own criteria of being? As we go forward into this episode, try to immerse yourself in the episode. Put yourself in the shoes of a random person going through life. Separate yourself from your emotion as much as you can. Aristotle said, man is by nature a social animal. An individual who is unsocial, naturally and not by accident, is either beneath our notice or more than human. Society is something that precedes the individual. Anyone who either cannot lead the common life or is so self-sufficient as not to need to, and therefore does not partake of society, is either a beast or a god. But let me explain this for a minute. What it means is, Aristotle put human life into three different categories. He distinguishes beasts, human beings, and then gods. But more importantly, human beings are what he deems the most natural part of being. Because as he says, if you don't partake of society, it is because you are either above society or beneath society. So society is made of humans, really. So a person, a man or a woman, an individual, is by nature a social animal. That means he was manufactured, he was made, he was born to be social. He was born to belong into society and to belong to society. Let's make the difference. Beasts do not belong into society, even though they might belong to society. Because they might be people biologically formed as human beings. But the simple fact that they don't belong into society makes them beasts, even though they are biologically belonging to society. So those are animals who are not social. But then they are the social animals. Those animals are the ones who belong into and to society. And last but not least, they are the gods. The gods are those who may belong to society even belong into society, but don't act like they need to belong neither into or to society. So what Aristotle is saying here is that if a person is incapable of being social, but he's not incapable because he does not want to, but he's incapable as a result of can't, that person is a beast, because he just can't. He's a beast. He's not human. He does not belong to the human society. So there are those who can and do. Those are humans. But there are those who can but don't, because they do not need it. They are above society. Those are gods. Every normal human being is defined based on the different attachment they have to other human beings. So, to be a member of society as we know it, one must have a very solid and defined relationship with other human beings. If we try to build up on that premise, we'll notice one interesting thing. The fact is that over time, society has changed. Rules have evolved from era to era. So humans have known different ways to relate to each other. And whether they are successful in their endeavors greatly depends on how skilled they are at that being a human in their era. Alexander the Great might not be as great a politician as today as he was in his time. Who knows? He still has the knowledge. But the way we relate to each other these days might have been detrimental to him back then, and vice versa. See, you can start to see where I'm going with this. The only thing that does not change in this equation is the person of Alexander the Great, as far as his knowledge, his personality is concerned, right? But other than that, everything else will have to change, including the way he relates to other people. So, not only do human beings evolve based on their need and how they navigate their environment to obtain satisfactions with those needs, but the precise way to relate to others is imposed on them by society, right? They do not decide, they just roll and play the game, because otherwise they would not be good players and ipso facto would have no chance to win the game. Most of us do not understand nor know it, but our personality is greatly dependent on the society we live in. It puts an imprint on us. Our nature is mixed up with who we need to be in order to properly navigate our society. Remember that Aristotle said that society precedes the individual. It means that not only does society come before the individual, but also it's more important than him. So, in order to effectively ensure its survival, each human being must lose themselves in it, thus abandoning part of their real identity. The result of that abandonment is that now each of us is somewhat programmed to behave in a certain way. That is what makes us part of society. Because not only does his survival depend on it, but he does not even know that society reprograms him precisely to depend on it. Now, here is where the matter gets a little tricky. The fact that we all depend on society to survive is unequivocally consequential of whether we understand the vis-a-vis. Now, what do I mean when I say the vis-a-vis? The vis-a-vis is a French expression to say whoever is facing you, who you're facing. The vis-a-vis. The reason for that is that we must interact with that human, Those interactions involve basic communication like greetings, small talking, and more complex communication like negotiating amongst one another to get to one's benefits. Those more complex interactions are never straightforward, for they involve defending one's interests. Those interests are rarely in favor of those we want them from, right? For that, some of us must trick their way into getting what they want, which brings us to the how. The how is made possible by the level of control and mastery that one has over the vis-a-vis. That mastery is only useful through knowledge of personality. Which personality? The one of that person. That is when it becomes important to know a person. But what does it mean in this case to know a person in order to relate to them better so we can be a social animal to the best of our abilities? We have seen earlier that the different needs that we need to bring satisfaction to force us human to be political, meaning to achieve dominance amongst one another in order to get to our goals by using what we think might appeal to who we're facing. That is politics. That is how we turn political. That's why, in essence, every social being is political. To achieve our goals, then, we indulge in sweet talking, coercion, or any other way we think the other member of society might find inescapable. But how do we know what might get us through the door to get a person to yield the power? Well, we just know what can trigger them, right? In our society, when we need a service from someone, the main coin of exchange is money. We use it because it is socially accepted as a way to compensate others for a certain service. It is not judged because, regardless of the service, we assume that it is only right to earn something in return. However, the game goes further than just exchanging services. The very nature of the human being prioritizes his own needs above others. Thus, he needs to have what he wants, and if possible, keep what he could have paid in exchange for it. To achieve this, he has recourses to ways. Ways that would appeal to a person in specific manners, maybe in catering to his insecurities or to certain deep ones. The constitution of a human being is made up of needs, such as need of security. And if I say security, I mean physical security, emotional security, and social security, or any other kind of security we can think of. Need of recognition, which is closely tied to the need of achievement. Those feed the existence of a human as he constantly asks the question, why? Why am I here? What am I to achieve on this earth? The lack of meaningful and relevant answer to that question brings satisfaction of those needs as filler. Good enough answer. So, knowing and acknowledging those human needs translate into knowing, or at least having a broad view of what a human is. Thus, how to relate to him. in order to be as perfect of a norm of a political animal as one can possibly be. We might not necessarily understand or even notice it, but each of us put on a face that is not ours. It is automatic. Some of us do know it, but some do not. The reason why we feel the need to put on a face is precisely because of our political nature. We are conditioned by society to be decent, so we can negotiate our ways through the world. But does decency mean virtue? Absolutely not. Everything we put on our facade, most of the time, is purposely designed to appeal to the political animal in the other person. It is generally not the real us. That's where we start to face some kind of inconsistency. Understand the difference between decency and virtue. Decency is the set of behavior that one practices till mastery because it is socially acceptable. And virtue is a set of rules that one adapts deeply because it aligns with our values. In other words, decency aligns with society, but virtue is an internal and deep power that one must do whatever aligns with the higher power. It may be God, the universe, or however you decide to call it. But what if we do not have the virtue, but need to show its presence? That's when decency arises. It is not really us. It is fume, smoke, haze. It's what we display because society says we must do so. Remember that for Aristotle, all human beings, except for beasts and gods, submit to the same political nature. And we just found out that we mostly put on a certain face deliberately to reach a certain goal in society. So, if two people are negotiating, it's likely for one to put on a certain appearance while the other person bases his judgment on the fact that he knows what that appearance might pertain to. From that point of view, what appears is that there's really no ground of communication because two people are luring each other and themselves into a continuum of moving sense where they hold no control. They are all acting on the premise that they know and understand the vis-a-vis, which they don't. Life is a succession of yes and no, really. What we all have become is nothing but a result to what we have said yes or no to. That's just how everything can be summarized. And that's the truth that could never be dismantled. That applies to everything. So does it apply to everyone in some regard? That means that even though we are unique and special, we all still function this in the same way, at least on the generals. So, the needs of the people we interact with are the same as ours. If we do have fears, pride, emotion, that means everyone else has it, because we all have been manufactured in the same way. So, although it might appear to be a wise move to study and know other people, it can be even more useful to know oneself, because if one discovers who one is, then one has a more than average idea of who the others are. When you know yourself, decency can no longer be used against you, because the fool can fool the one who understands the foolery, his own foolery. Because if sages are different because of who they are, fools are all the same. Because not only do they have their foolishness in common, but they also have the ignorance of the foolishness in common. Know thyself, and you shall conquer suffering. For suffering is what we endure when we do not understand the motivation of people around us. But once you set out to contemplate, observe, and know yourself, you ipso facto understand your own motivations, your fears, your reasons, your needs. You get to the bottom of you so much so that you understand the motivations of others around you. It's only logical. Observe martial arts. When people spend stupendous amount of time refining and analyzing themselves, knowing each bone in the detail on themselves, well, it is easier for them to understand others, because they understand that because all humans are built identically, it must mean that the way one can be hit and hurt is the same way one can hit and hurt other humans. So the question is, why should I waste my time trying to know you if I can get to know you through knowing myself, through observing myself, understanding my deepest motivations about life? I can have a snippet of yours, and most of the time I will be closer to the truth than someone who's not practicing knowing themselves. Remember when I told you that every human being has needs and fears? Well, do you think you are safe around me if I happen to be fully aware of my deepest fears, my insecurity, what motivates me, and how far I'm willing to go for something I want? Do you think you're safe around me? No matter how strong you are still weaker than the one who has come face to face with himself. That person is dangerous, deadly, powerful, because knowing who one is equates to bettering oneself, upgrading oneself to a better version of oneself. What do you think will happen when a short-tempered individual suddenly comes to the realization that he's short-tempered, and that he needs to do better, that he needs to change? Well, that person decides to monitor himself and deliberately build himself to a calmer version of himself, putting his emotions under control. Now he's no longer reacting to your shenanigans, but he is rather taking concrete and solid steps to manhandle you. Real power does not come from one being in control of a large population, but rather being in control of oneself while facing a large population. Outthinking oneself in relation to oneself, outsmarting oneself, outdisciplining oneself, bullying oneself into submission toward realism. That's the man, the one Nietzsche calls the Übermensch, the the other man, the one Aristotle calls the God, because he needs not to meddle with the politics of social animals. He lives by virtue because he knows himself. He knows his flaws, his fears, his needs, and then he sets out to conquer them all. Remember, knowing yourself demands time, self-observation, and most importantly, self-honesty. You have got to be deeply and brutally honest with yourself. If you exhibit a behavior that needs correcting, notice it and don't find a pretense to ease yourself out of self-critique. Example, suppose you went out with your friends. Someone tried to bully you, or just simply a fight broke and you froze. You couldn't do anything. The self-searching practice would be to ask yourself why you froze. Was it fear? Maybe, but fear of what? Death? Prison? Whatever the answer may be, figure it out, and if necessary, make adjustment. You do not necessarily need to go and look for another fight to make up for the one you lost, but at least be conscious of what happened to you. But do not evade the truth and go around trying to force an explanation on your friends that you did not fight because you could have killed someone. That is not true, and you know it. Be honest with yourself. It matters. If you're a bitch, be the first to know it and to fix it. Make yourself dangerous, not by hurting others, but by hurting yourself more than anyone ever could. Let me say this again. If you are a bitch, be the first to know it and to fix it. Make yourself dangerous, not by hurting others, but by hurting yourself more than anyone can ever do it. That's how you free yourself. Telling yourself that you're a bitch is the first step to stepping up to manhood and godlikeness. Why else would I be political, decent, human, if I am already transcendent, virtuous, and godlike? The beast is the one asocial because he does not have the competence to be political. The human is the one who cannot survive without being political. The God is the one who is past the politics. He is grounded. He is solid. Does not search from outside what he already knows exists inside of him. How can you hurt such a person? How can you outwit such a person? Have you ever seen God sparring with the devil? The match is just for show, because the outcome is irrelevant. He who knows himself knows the others more than they know themselves. Know yourself, and the answer to the question of life shall always be yours. My name is Ice, and this is the Ice Pod.